NexGard Plus, efoxaconazole, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. Every one-and-done monthly dose protects canine patients against heartworm disease, fleas, ticks, roundworms, and hookworms. All in a delicious beef-flavored soft chew. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. To learn more, visit NexGardPlusClinic.com.
You're listening to Veterinary Vertex, a podcast of the AVMA Journals. In this episode, we chat about how veterinarians can tackle zoonotic diseases with our guests, Will Sander and Salagna Chakraborty.
Welcome to Veterinary Vertex. I'm Editor-in-Chief Lisa Fortier, and I'm joined by Associate Editor Sarah Wright. Today, we will have Will and Salagna joining us. Will and Salagna, thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedules to be with us here today.
Of course.
Yeah, really appreciate the opportunity.
Let's dive right in. Will, your JAVMA article discusses results from a national survey that shed light on how zoonosis-specific resources, collaborative networks, and enhanced communication can help U.S. veterinarians tackle zoonotic disease. Please share with our listeners the background on this study.
Sure, happy to, Sarah. So, I mean, there have been several regional studies that have been done through cross-sectional surveys in the last 15 years, in states like Washington, Michigan, Arizona, but not a really great national snapshot across licensed veterinarians. And so the goal of the study was to try and get that better representative sample. And there's also obviously additional ongoing concerns. You know, we just went through COVID-19 and the transmission possibilities there as a very real zoonosis and reverse zoonosis, I think, has heightened the attention to this too. So, and then I think the final piece for me in approaching this research topic was I'm very interested in occupational exposures and risks in the veterinary profession. And so this is one of those places where, you know, we talk a lot about it, I think, in the veterinary medicine field, but often it's hard to quantify or get a good sense of what's really going on. So that's what drove us to look at this national survey.
Yeah, it's a really timely topic. As we know, there's definitely a huge issue right now we have going on with influenza and various different species. So this is really good information to share with our listeners and with our readers.
Exactly.
Salagna and Will, what were some of the pivotal findings from this study?
I think for me, the findings that really stand out from the study were the fact that, we know that veterinarians know more about One Health than maybe human health professionals. But the knowledge regarding zoonotic diseases, that's maybe not translating as much. And the fact that there's not enough communication happening between veterinarians and their clients regarding zoonotic diseases. And there were no overlap in some of the diseases that clients were talking about or the vets were talking about with their clients. So I think that was an important gap. And then the lack of communication between veterinarians and human medicine and other public health professionals, which is definitely a missed opportunity for collaboration and more communication on this topic.
Yeah, I mean, I think Salagna captured a lot of the really salient points there. I mean, we've known from other studies, too, that, you know, veterinarians don't develop a lot of relationships with physicians or other healthcare professionals. And that goes both ways. It's the same from the physician side, too. And so we've known this for a long time, but we've had a trouble bridging that gap. And so I think this study helps highlight the reasons why that's important. And then I think that disconnect between veterinarians and clients, you know, clients really want to talk about raw foods and external parasites. And we love to talk about lepto and rabies, right? And so there's certainly overlaps that happen there around, you know, ticks and disease prevention that way. But we need to try and be on the better page there and understand what the clients want to hear, not necessarily what they want to hear, but also how to like make that connection.
Really great point. And I think Sarah too, you know, talking about influenza, this is just a pivotal time for veterinarians to really stand up and demonstrate all that we know about zoonotic diseases.
Yeah, agreed. And I think, you know, as Salagna mentioned, One Health is very well known. You know, more than 80% of the practitioners knew about the One Health concept in our study. But very few know what zoonotic diseases to report, right? So we know a lot about these zoonotic diseases in many cases, and we're taught about them in school and in continuing education. But we still have a gap about, well, what do we actually need to report and who needs to know, I think is a piece that we can do better on.
Really great point. Something you took in your accreditation in vet school and then didn't really exactly follow up. So really good information. Will, while I have you, what sparked your research interest in zoonotic diseases?
Well, I think this has been an interest of mine since veterinary school. I think, you know, there's a continual emergence of diseases that we've seen over the last several decades. And it seems like more and more of those emergent diseases are zoonotic in nature. And so, and I think the other thing in the U.S. is we have such a close relationship with companion animals in our households, too. And so there's a lot of unexplored areas of where those disease interface can happen, right? And we don't always understand what that risk is in some cases. And we're also veterinarians, we're unique experts in this area, and we're good communicators. That's what we get to do every day, most of the time in clinical practice, is interact with our clients and try and convey very complex scientific topics to them in often 5 or 10 minute increments. And so how can we be more knowledgeable and effective, I think, is one of the pieces that I really am focused on and looking, talking with veterinary students here at University of Illinois, is how can we actually improve our communication style? There's a lot of challenging communication topics, from antimicrobial resistance to zoonotic diseases to climate change. How can we try and be better communicators around those challenging topics and make sure clients take away what we hope that we want them to take away?
Yeah, it's an important topic. It's not just in the clinic itself. It's at the horse barn. It's at the grocery store, at the gym, at a cocktail party. And sometimes you just have to like walk away with the misinformation here behind you.
Anytime you have veterinarian on your shirt or somewhere on you, you immediately get tagged. So yes, it's true.
So Lagna, what inspired your passion for research interest in zoonotic diseases?
Yeah, so I'm not a veterinarian by training. I just did my PhD in disease ecology and epidemiology. And in way, way, way back, I did a master's in public health and microbiology. So I was always interested in diseases and, like, you know, what makes people sick. But I think through my research working on vector-borne and tick-borne diseases, I started getting really interested by how this really big world of zoonotic diseases and the fact that COVID happened in our lifetimes and the impact that it had in all our lifetimes, that was something that just made me realize that for me, this was a really great field to be in, not just to do research, but also to do a lot of outreach and scientific communication with different groups that I get to work with. So, and I was always interested in how, like Will said, occupational exposures, and seeing that firsthand through this study was really an eye-opening opportunity.
Well, you were talking, it reminded me of a kind of creepy but book you might like. It's called Get Well Soon by Jennifer Wright. It talks about major plagues and epidemics and like historical over time and how they were handled and weren't handled. So maybe you and I share a little creepy interest in,
yeah,
in diseases.
I'll have to check that out.
And a little self-serving for us, Will, we're very grateful for this, but why did you choose to submit this manuscript to JAVMA?
Sure. So, I mean, we debated several different journals. You know, as Lagna mentioned, she comes from a different background that's not veterinary medicine either. And although this was a survey of veterinarians, there's lots of other places we thought about putting this, but we really wanted the audience to be general practitioners and getting a wide range of those types of practitioners who had eyes on this study too. And so for that reason, I think JAVMA is one of the best journals to put it in front of for those folks, because it is something that's widely read. Anybody who's an ABMA member, you know, generally has JAVMA. And so it's a great piece to do that. And then I think for me, I mean, I've worked with JAVMA in previous iterations, and this has been a really enjoyable experience working with JAVMA too. Been very responsive from the editorial team. And I think it's been really useful how quickly this has been turned around and then featured moving forward.
Great. Thank you for the pitch. little prompted, but that's okay. Yeah, I would add, you know, we now proudly have 105,000 members. And we just did a journal survey. We're still iterating some of the responses, but 87% of AVMA members read print JAVMA still. It's really, really impressive. So it is the right place to put something like this that's important across all species. So thank you again for sharing it with us.
Sure. Yeah, happy to.
So Lagna, earlier Sarah asked you what were some of the most pivotal findings, and that might be different from this question. Like, what were some of the surprising findings from your study?
Yeah, I think for me, again, coming as an outsider in this research, it was a learning curve because I had to understand some of, you know, working with veterinarians, what it entailed. But looking through the results, what I found it surprising was we've seen that in some of the studies that were done from the cross-sectional work in some of the states and studies that have been done across the globe as well, that veterinarians tend to not follow always the best infection control measures. They were probably not wearing PPE always. And I was surprised to see that because I know this is such a great, highly educated group of, you know, professionals. And, you know, this group is not following the guidelines that they know. And then there was also that piece where they were actively also diagnosing zoonotic diseases in their clinics. So they are at risk as well. So like that disconnect was something that I was really surprised to see.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes we just almost get too comfortable in a way, like, oh, I've been safe before, I'm going to be okay now. But it's a really good reminder for our listeners to always utilize the best biosecurity practices. We also strive for that too whenever we are promoting manuscripts. So when I'm selecting images to use, I always try to make sure that if people are touching animals, they're wearing gloves, et cetera. So I'm just trying to make sure that we're promoting the highest standards of care that we can.
Yeah, I spoke to veterinary friends and I was talking to them about the study and they're like, oh yeah, ringworm. Oh yeah, we get it all the time. I was like, okay.
Yeah, it's normal. You talk to your friends that aren't veterinarians about that. And they're like, what are you talking about? Like, you did what today? And for those of you just joining us, we're discussing zoonotic diseases with our guests, Will Sander and Slagna Chakraborty. So now transitioning more to the personal side of things. Will, how did your advanced training prepare you to write this manuscript?
Well, I mean, I have an MPH on top of my DVM. And so that public health training, I think, helped give me some of the background for survey design too. On top of that, I direct a DVM MPH program here. So the original initiator for this study was actually Annalisa Fama, who is a DVM MPH student here at Illinois, since is now a practicing veterinarian down here at Champaign-Urbana. And so I think those things really drove a lot of the study design and how do we pull some of this literature together. And then also how to disseminate these surveys. I think we all get barraged by surveys all the time. And you know, survey response rates are pretty low these days, which is fair enough. So how do you actually get it in front of the people that you want it to be in front of? So, I mean, we utilize the network of National Association of State Public Health Veterinarians and having that connection there to disseminate across the 50 states, at least in some form or fashion, was at least one outlet to do that.
Yeah, Lisa and I had learned a lot about survey research, just doing our own surveys for the journals to inform our next steps, make sure everything's evidence-based. So it's been a steep learning curve, but a very, very useful one. And Slagna, how did your advanced training prepare you to write this manuscript?
Like I mentioned, I learned quite a lot about the veterinary world through this project, but I have had some experience writing manuscripts while I was doing my PhD. And I really like doing survey research and behavioral work because it brings to the forefront, like, you know, human behaviors and perceptions of specifically in diseases, because there might be risks already that we might not be able to control too much, but it's your behavior. If we can have some idea about behavior that can be modified and can have a protective effect, I think that is really remarkable. So I've worked with farmers and extension workers in Illinois regarding their beliefs on tick-borne diseases. So this was a great opportunity to learn about veterinarians' risk perceptions about zoonotic diseases. So that really came in handy while working on this manuscript.
Now, this next set of questions is going to be really important for our listeners. Will, what is one piece of information the veterinarian should know before discussing zoonotic diseases with a client?
Yeah, so I think one of the big things I try and talk to whenever I give zoonotic disease talks at continuing education seminars, things like that, is trying to ensure the client knows that they can have their physician contact, whoever their primary care provider is, reach out to you as a veterinarian. I think that's a good, great way to try and encourage that opening of the dialogue between our two professions is going through the client. And then I also really talk to people about, you know, if anyone in their house is under 5 years of age or potentially has some immune compromised situation, just be extra cautious because we don't always know about some of the disease risks that can happen with interacting with animals, even for a brief period of time or they're in their house 24/7. So I think those are the two big pieces that I would take away from this. And that was borne out in looking at the study too.
I remember during our diagnostic medicine rotation, they made us watch this really horrifying video. It's like called Animal FBI or something. And it was about the small child getting roundworm from their puppy and then like going blind or something. And it was meant to scare you into always talking about zoonotic potential of diseases when you're actually seeing clients and their patients. So that definitely was stuck out to me during my veterinary training and really made us think about communicating zoonotic potential for certain ailments that you may treat.
Right.
And on the other side of the relationship, Salagna, what's one thing the general public should consider around zoonotic diseases?
I think as a general public person myself, I don't have pets, but I'd like to have one day. But I think COVID has definitely, you know, brought to the forefront that, you know, you could get something from your companion animals and you could give it to them. So like the whole concept of One Health, it is so like visibly evident that when we get sick, we need to be conscious about protecting ourselves as well as our animals and vice versa. If our animals were to get sick, I think making sure that they receive the right and prompt care and also taking care of everybody who's close just goes to show that it's really important for, you know, reducing the overall burden of potential zoonotic diseases that can occur.
Well, thank you. We've certainly learned a lot from both of you from your manuscript and even more today. So just learning a little bit about you as people. Salagna, what is the oldest or the most interesting item on your desk or in your desk drawer?
So the most interesting item that I have is, so I write poetry sometimes, and I am part of this group locally where they publish like a literary magazine, and they published one of my poems. It's like half a poem, half a travelogue about my travels to Portugal some years ago to visit some friends. So that's right now the most interesting thing I have in my desk. I have a lot of other random junk and papers and stuff that I have to do, but that stands out as the most interesting.
That's fascinating. We've definitely not gotten that answer before. And Will, what is your favorite animal fact?
I think I always like the idea of, you know, the mammals have almost all mammals have 7 cervical vertebrae, which I think is amazing to me, just given the diversity of sizes that we have from giraffe, where they would just be served a lot better to have way more than 7 vertebrae to bend down and drink water instead of having to spread their legs apart to do it. You know, all the way down to like a little elephant shrew, right? It's just a kind of amazing from that standpoint. And then for some reason, you know, manatees and sloths are the only ones who have variability in the cervical vertebrae. And so I think that's fascinating to me. Having worked a lot with avian species where they're all over the map with how many cervical vertebrae they have, I think that's a fascinating piece that a lot of the public don't always know either.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Thanks for sharing. I don't think we've had an anatomy fact yet. So just thank you again, Will and Salagna. We really appreciate your time for being here today and also for sharing your manuscript with JAVMA.
Thank you so much for having us and for this podcast opportunity.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
And to our listeners, you can read Will and Salagna's current Someone Health article in print JAVMA or online using your favorite search engine. I'm Sarah Wright with Lisa Fortier. We want to thank each of you for joining us on this episode of the Veterinary Vertex podcast. We love sharing cutting-edge veterinary research with you, and we want to hear from you. Be sure to leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you listen to.